We're going to make sure that the benefits of clean energy and the jobs that it will bring reach the pockets of this country that should be at the front of the line.
Hi, I'm Jim Doyle, President of Business Forward, and you're listening to the Business Forward podcast. Business Forward helps local business leaders fix Washington by bringing Washington to them. Subscribe to our podcast to hear conversations with policy experts, elected officials, and business leaders about important issues like climate action and affordable health care.
In this episode, Business Forward hosted U.S. Secretary of Energy Jennifer Granholm for a briefing and Q&A moderated by New Deal leader Phoenix Mayor Kate Gallego on the American Jobs Plan and building our energy infrastructure back better. Secretary Granholm answered questions from business leaders across the country on topics ranging from the security and resilience of our energy system to American competitiveness in the clean energy sector. She also discussed the importance of public-private collaboration and how business leaders can get involved. We hope you enjoy the conversation. Hello, everyone. Welcome. I'm Liz Fairchild, Executive Director of Business Forward. Today, we are delighted to host the U.S. Secretary of Energy, Jennifer Granholm, and New Deal leader, Mayor Kate Gallego of Phoenix, Arizona. We host these briefings to give small business leaders like you a seat at the table to share what's most important to you. We'd also like to thank the many local and state organizations for joining us and inviting their members, including Small Business for America's Future and the Hispanic, Black, and AAPI chambers across the country. Madam Secretary, thank you so much for joining us today. I'll hand it over to you.
Great. Thank you so much, Liz. And it is truly a pleasure to be here. My thanks to the team at Business Forward for organizing this briefing series and to all of y'all for tuning in. It is really a pleasure to speak with folks who are representing so many different businesses and communities all across the country. What power you have, whether you're one of the small businesses that are the backbone of the U.S. economy, or if you're a Fortune 500 company, this administration sees you as an essential partner in our effort to build back better. So I do want to leave plenty of time for a question and answer, and I know Mayor Gallego is going to be moderating, so I'm excited to have that conversation. But let me just right now cut right to the chase. President Biden's vision, it's a bold vision, calls for a more prosperous and equitable and inclusive future. And that depends on this American Jobs Plan that I'm sure many of you've heard about. It's being debated right now in Congress. It is the key to seizing on a transformational moment for our economy. So from my perspective as head of the Department of Energy, and honestly, from the perspective of the Department of Commerce, from the perspective of the Department of Interior, from the perspective of all of our allies in the clean energy and environmental space, this is huge. Every single country in the world is now working together to tackle climate change through the Paris Agreement, 196 countries. And for our part, President Biden wants to put America on track to reduce our greenhouse gas emissions 50 to 52% by the year 2030. So we've got 9 years, and to reach 100% clean electricity by 2035. So we have 14 years for that, and to hit that net zero carbon emissions target by 2050. So net zero by 2050. And that, those goals are because the entire world is moving in that direction. And because of that, it is creating this huge opportunity out of what would otherwise be a crisis. And the opportunity is this, and I know you'll recognize it. By the end of this decade, the market for the products that will reduce greenhouse gas emissions and generate clean electricity, the market for those products is going to skyrocket to $23 trillion at a minimum, $23 trillion. And we think in this administration that it should be American companies who are leading that market, American workers who are building those technologies, and American innovators who are discovering the breakthroughs that allow the world to meet the challenge of climate change. But the simple fact is that if we want to win this race for clean energy technologies, we've got a lot of work to do in the U.S. We have let manufacturing, for example, as a share of our economy, it has now hit a 72-year low. We have just neglected to keep pace as our competitors have pushed ahead with government investment in research and development in partnerships with their private sectors. We rely on imports, particularly, as you know, from China, for the supply chains that are necessary to build these clean energy technologies. We've just stood here while other countries have just leapt over the top of us, and we have just, you know, stood by the side of the road and said, oh, that's fine. President Biden is saying, enough. We've got to reverse those trends, and we've got to start leading on clean energy. After I was governor of Michigan, I went to China just to see what they were doing in clean energy and to get a sense of how much they were committed to cornering the market on these clean energy products. And I was at one demonstration where there were a bunch of products being demonstrated, and the mayor of the town we were in leans over to me and he says, so when do you think the United States is going to get clean energy policy? And I said, well, I don't know, Congress is so divided. And he just looked at me and he smiled and he said, take your time, because they see our passivity as their economic opportunity. And that's why, honestly, we are so all in on this American Jobs Plan to restore our manufacturing backbone and to be able for us as a nation to corner the market on these key technologies. It's why since January 20th, the Department of Energy, we've already put $1.5 billion into deploying the proven clean energy sources we have, while we have been further developing the cutting edge technologies that are on the cusp of commercialization. We've rebooted something known as our Loan Programs Office so that we can put, we've got $40 billion in loan authority in that office. We want to put that to use to back the world's next Tesla and First Solar. We want to generate good returns for taxpayers in the process, and we want to put people to work. So just last week, as an example, we issued a blueprint for building our own supply chain for advanced battery manufacturing, the batteries that go into the electric vehicles, for example, so that we can power our American-made products like electric vehicles with batteries assembled in America. But all of those items that I just announced, that just really is just a down payment on this clean energy future. The American Jobs Plan is going to torque our goals up way high. It's going to ensure that we can reach all of the goals that the president has set forward. So on top of fixing roads and bridges, you've heard that it being described as an infrastructure bill, and it is that, but it is called the American Jobs Plan as well. So the plan is going to invest hundreds of billions of dollars to, for example, modernize our electrical grid, to make that grid run on clean power and improve the resilience of the grid for those who are in extreme climate prone areas, or the cybersecurity of the grid. That's investing in infrastructure, which is the transmission grid. It's not roads and bridges, but it certainly is going to help us propel this clean energy economy. The American Jobs Plan is also going to allow us to build 500,000 electric vehicle charging stations along the nation's highways. It's going to put us at the global forefront of clean energy research and development. And it's going to rebuild this domestic manufacturing backbone and shore up the supply chain for critical minerals and critical materials and so much more. Now, for those of you who aren't in the clean energy business, you might be wondering, why do I care about this? Why does it matter to me? Just think about it. I mean, clean energy is going to leave, even just on the most basic level, your offices will have lower energy bills. Solar energy, you know, uses a fuel that's free. Wind energy uses a fuel that's free, solar and wind. Electric vehicles are going to lower your transportation and your shipping costs. The American Jobs Plan is going to mean better air and better health for your workers, your customers, your communities. It's going to mean that our energy grid is more secure and resilient, so we can keep power on in the face of those extreme weather events that are made worse by climate change. And it's going to mean a whole lot more demand for your products and services, because these investments will spark an economic revolution, because clean energy already employs 3 million people nationwide. And with the American Jobs Plan, we're going to create good paying opportunities for millions more people. And these are jobs that will lift families up, remaking the middle class. It's going to strengthen our economy and revitalize entire communities along the way. And so that's why we're going to make sure that the benefits of clean energy and the jobs that it will bring reach the pockets of this country that should be at the front of the line. Many of you live in communities that have been locked out. Communities of color, for example, locked out of opportunities in the clean energy economy, even as they may have borne the brunt of fossil fuel pollution, or low-income communities paying far too much for their energy. Fossil fuel communities that have powered us to this moment, but are on the edge of this transition. And we want them to see themselves powering the future of America and not just the past. And this is what President Biden means when he says we're going to build back better. But to do it, we're going to need your help in getting this American Jobs Plan to his desk. Your businesses are the beating heart of our economy, and people are going to want to take your pulse. So if you see this vision for a stronger economy and healthier and more prosperous communities powered by clean energy, I hope that you will speak up. I know that Business Forward will help to facilitate that. And I hope that you'll help to let people know just how big of a deal that this plan will be. And I hope we can work together to get it passed. So now I'm happy to take some of your questions. And I think Liz is going to introduce the mayor.
So much, Madam Secretary. Now I'd like to introduce our moderator for today's event, New Deal leader, Mayor Kate Gallego of Phoenix, Arizona. So thank you both so much for being here. I'm glad we get to have a discussion today. Mayor Gallego, I'll hand it over to you.
Wonderful. Thank you, Liz. And thank you to our secretary, who left me very excited to be part of what could be just an amazing transformation for our country when we get that American Jobs Plan moving forward. No surprise for a mayor from Phoenix, which is the city with the most solar installed on government property. I'm going to start with the renewable energy question, the huge potential in that area. And we're going to go through a wide variety of topics today. I'm going to try to batch together questions from leaders all over the country so that we can have a real conversation about what interests our business leaders and get to hear from our secretaries. Amazing expertise at this really important time. So will you start with talking about how feasible are the administration's clean energy goals, and what do we need to reach them, including on research and development to accelerate that transition?
Yeah, thanks for asking that. I mean, as you're probably aware, I mean, the Department of Energy has 17 national labs, and we are doing research and development all the time. I call us all the time the solutions department. But we also need to deploy the clean energy technologies that we know are ready. So the goal of reaching 100% clean electricity by 2035, it's really ambitious, but it is achievable. And that's why it's a top priority of this administration, because the power sector contributes about 28% of US emissions. It is really the lowest hanging fruit when it comes to decarbonization, as we call it. Not only do we have a lot of the technologies that we need to deploy the power sector to make it clean, you know, like wind and solar, as you're well aware, but these clean sources are also increasingly cheaper, as I mentioned, than fossil fuels, and therefore they're very scalable. So we're going to keep innovating on those and prioritizing even faster deployment in order to reach those goals and to get lower energy bills and to meet our carbon goals. But we also know those technologies alone won't get us all the way to our goals. So we do need 24/7 dispatchable power that's zero carbon. So for starters, we need to modernize, for example, the hydropower system. And importantly, we need not just to maintain our nuclear fleet, which currently provides over half of our clean energy, but we need to develop advanced nuclear technologies, and we need to keep innovating, basically. Beyond advanced nuclear, we're aggressively pursuing something called carbon capture, meaning taking carbon and sequestering it underground where it is safe so that it is not in the atmosphere, clean hydrogen, large-scale storage, all to add 24/7 clean power options. So it's, and just one other quick thing. Earlier this month, we rolled out our very first Energy Earth Shot, we're calling it. This is a series of tough but achievable targets that are going to transform the next generation clean energy technologies with the greatest potential to help us reach those goals. So we started with our one for one in one hydrogen shot. And that basically means we're going to reduce the cost of hydrogen by 80%. It is $1 for 1 kilogram in one decade of hydrogen, which is a clean power source that will be dispatchable and hopefully soon very affordable.
It's very exciting. American innovation leading the way. I began my career at one of our Department of Energy labs, and I know
the
amazing.
You know. Which one were you at?
Sandia National Labs in Albuquerque, my first paid job. So keep up the great work. And now we're going to cover questions from business leaders all over the country. I'm going to try to combine energy mix questions from Lex Haslin, CEO of Enso Infrastructure in Brooklyn, Nicholas Russell of ConocoPhillips in Houston, Texas, and Laura Watson of Ag Technologies in Rochester, Indiana. So we've talked a lot about wind and solar, but what is the right mix and what should we be talking about in terms of geothermal, nuclear? And the question does ask about hydrogen, but the Earth Shot is, you've already mentioned that, but if you want to.
Well, let me just say that in short, you know, it's going to take a lot of zero carbon technologies. And yes, we are supporting and advancing all of them. So solar and wind get a lot of attention because they are really ready for deployment at scale right now, and we want to quickly do so. You know, in March, building off of the Obama administration's work to cut the cost of solar, our solar energy technology office announced a new goal of 2 cents per kilowatt hour by the year 2030. That's another halving of what the cost is right now. It would make solar the cheapest source of electricity generation in America, and it would really set the stage for solar to supply up to half of our nation's electricity with huge job creation potential. We should be building, by the way, the solar panels and the racks and trackers and all of that in the United States as well, but don't even get me started on that. With wind energy, we're going to be expanding capacity for both onshore and offshore. So in April, the Biden administration announced a new goal of adding 30 gigawatts of offshore wind capacity by the end of the decade. We've already approved a major offshore wind project and a proposed new offshore wind project on the East Coast. And we've opened up a new frontier on the West Coast as well for offshore wind. In fact, in West Virginia, they're now producing hundreds of tons of steel to build an installation vessel, a ship that will help us get those offshore wind turbines up and running. But bottom line is, you're absolutely right. There's a bunch of other technologies that really do deserve attention. Obviously, DOE is working to move a broad range of these technologies toward commercialization. I did mention that nuclear energy provides over half of our clean energy capacity today. And we're looking at new designs that are small, modular reactors, simpler, easier to build, less waste. And DOE analysis of the potential in geothermal, and the Western states in particular, really great potential for geothermal. It really suggests that we could increase geothermal energy generation about 52-fold in the next 30 years. And it would allow us to supply about 17% of our national energy needs and create 260,000 jobs. A bunch of other countries use geothermal to a much greater extent than we do. We have all of this resources under our feet, and we should be mining for that. And as I mentioned, the hydrogen shot is also a really exciting potential. So we want to get all of these market ready, and we want to help deploy as much capacity as quickly as possible.
What an exciting time for energy innovation.
It is.
So we have a lot of questions from utility companies to security firms around energy security and resilience. And obviously that has been a huge focus over the last year with threats to our critical energy infrastructure, from natural disasters like Texas's deep freeze to the attack on the Colonial Pipeline and one that has impacted so much of our country, the SolarWinds hacked. How can we better invest in energy security?
Yeah, thank you for raising this because it is such a big deal. I know the president just finished meeting with Vladimir Putin and is raising this issue of cybersecurity for the United States, and the G7 raised this as well to be able to partner with our allies. This is not just a U.S. issue. It is a global issue. And these incidents really demonstrate how urgently we need to strengthen our energy infrastructure and enhance that resilience, not to mention our overall cyber infrastructure. So the Texas freeze and those associated blackouts showed us the need to fortify the grid and to weatherize our critical energy infrastructure to withstand these intensifying climate impacts, whether it's extreme cold or extreme heat or wildfires. Solar winds and the Colonial Pipeline incident remind us that cybersecurity has to be a priority across all critical infrastructure. DOE has already taken steps to enhance the resilience of the electric grid, along with the utilities, against these physical and cyber threats. And just a couple of examples, in March, we launched these three research programs under our office. We have an office called CSER, which the acronym stands for Cybersecurity, Energy Security, and Emergency Response. That is basically the federal government's emergency response entity for energy security. And that organization is developing all these new safeguards against physical and cyber threats. We announced in April an $8.25 billion offer in loans for projects that will expand and improve electric transmission. And just weeks before the Colonial attack, we rolled out our 100-day plan to address cybersecurity risks, which involves a collaborative effort between CSER and the other cybersecurity agencies across the federal government and the electric industry to assess these cybersecurity needs. We need to do the same thing that we've done with electricity on the pipelines, because the pipelines don't have the same level of requirements that the transmission and the grid have. So we're working on that. But these are all really tiny steps in comparison to what we could do to improve this resiliency on the grid and on pipelines once we pass the American Jobs Plan. The president wants to invest $100 billion in this nationwide effort to revamp the entire electric grid. And it would allow us not just to add renewable capacity and transmission capacity to match, but would allow us to build greater security onto the system so that it is resilient and reliable in the face of any manner of threats.
The last year has certainly demonstrated the urgency and the need. Yeah. All right, now we are going to travel to Olive Branch, Missouri, where Diane Black, the owner of Hair Fashions, wants to talk about how we're going to fund these very important investments.
So that's a great question, and it is top of mind here in Washington, D.C. So as part of the American Jobs Plan, the president proposed this Made in America tax plan. And, you know, there's a widespread feeling, I think, among the public that for several years now, these major corporations have paid less than many who are watching here, paid not their fair share in taxes. You know, they hear statistics like how in 2018, 91 Fortune 500 companies paid zero in federal corporate taxes on income earned in the United States, or how across the board, the 2017 tax cut in half corporate tax rates to less than 8%. And the response is, you know, it's simply not right. We all benefit from the services that our taxes fund. We should all benefit from the functional infrastructure that those taxes pay for. So we should all be contributing accordingly. And it's why the president initially proposed raising the corporate tax rate to 28%, which is still well below the top rate under the Obama administration. The Made in America tax plan would also work to discourage offshoring so that we all aren't subsidizing companies that ship jobs abroad and crack down on the use of tax havens. So remove those loopholes that make it easy for companies to offshore. And over the course of his negotiations with Senator Shelley Moore Capito, the president indicated that he would be open to a 15% minimum corporate tax rather than an increase of the top rate. So there are different ways we can go about paying for this so that people pay their fair share, people and businesses. So ultimately, though, this is going to be determined in debates on Capitol Hill. The point is he's open to ideas from both sides of the aisle, and that we're going to continue to work with Congress to find something that works.
Wonderful. Thank you. I think we've rarely had a Secretary of Energy who has put so much time in keeping America working and workforce issues. So I think we're going to turn to one that's really very much in your area of expertise, and a question from Elizabeth Haynes, the CEO of the Silver Hair in Littleton, Colorado, who asks, what can the administration do to ensure fossil energy workers aren't left behind in this clean energy transition?
I love this question. You're right, because it is really a top priority for this administration to hear directly from communities as our nation undergoes this transition, but also to make sure that they are put at the front of the line, so that when we make these investments are targeted to people who have powered our nation so that they can then see themselves in the future. So I went to West Virginia earlier this month to hear directly from energy stakeholders, coal stakeholders, natural gas stakeholders, about the investments that they want to see in their state. And because they have powered our nation, we owe them to make sure that they are not left behind in this transition. And that's what you hear when you visit these fossil fuel communities, is that clean energy technologies, they're open, but they just want to make sure that they're not being retrained for jobs that don't arrive. So we want to make sure that the right incentives are in place to be able to attract the manufacturers, you know, the installation, the projects in the communities where these workers can benefit, and that will call for many of the skills that these workers already have. So for example, remediating coal mines, plugging abandoned oil and gas wells, extracting critical minerals, operating geothermal carbon capture facilities, all require skills that are not incompatible with skills that people in the fossil fuel industry right now already have. So the American Jobs Plan is going to invest tens of billions of dollars into this work backing. So here's an example. I love this. 25 carbon capture and hydrogen demonstration projects in fossil energy communities. So it means that those workers will be able to be part of those demonstration projects, which will be very large projects and employ lots of people. The American Jobs Plan sets aside $78 billion for workforce development, which would help workers gain, if they don't have the skills already, gain the skills they need in cases where skills matched work isn't immediately available. And we're laser focused really on increasing union participation as we undergo this transformation. At the DOE, we've got a new Office of Energy Jobs, and we have a labor working group that's bringing unions to the table so that as we're creating new jobs, we're making sure that they pay well and that they offer good benefits, that they allow for organizing. All we want to do is raise people into the middle class as we bring this whole new sector into the country. And it's very exciting because we've created this whole intergovernmental working group to focus on coal and power plant communities and how we can steer help and the benefits of this American Jobs Plan to those places, as well as to communities of color and communities who have often borne the brunt of fossil fuel pollution.
And let's stay very much on that same topic. We have a question from Ralph Ibarra, the president of the Diverse America Network in Washington, who wants to know, what actions do you plan to take so that economic justice is integrated in the policies, procedures, and practices of building our energy infrastructure back better, so that this huge undertaking will actually provide benefits to those historically underserved populations in America?
Yeah, could not be more important. We're working across the entire administration with this whole of government approach to make sure that 40% of the benefits from this clean energy transition go to disadvantaged communities. We want to right the historical wrongs that have made communities of color and low-income communities suffer the consequences of fossil fuel pollution for too long. And we want to make sure that every community reaps the rewards of this clean energy economy. I'm so proud to say that here at the Department of Energy, we've already taken these important steps to advance racial equity and environmental justice. For example, we have dedicated $15 million to accelerate solar deployment in underserved communities. We announced a $17 $3.3 million in STEM research at historically Black colleges and universities and other minority-serving institutions to invest in a talented, diverse energy workforce. We've also got a new Office of Energy Justice, which is headed by this fabulous woman named Shalonda Baker, who's exclusively focused on that work. Shalonda has overseen the creation of our Justice 40. We have an online mapping tool so that the public can see where the department is spending. So we're transparent as it relates to environmental justice. And the American Jobs Plan is going to make sure that as we expand this clean energy capacity, we're also opening up access to low-income communities and communities of color and creating jobs and in clean energy. And we're making those opportunities to people who have been underrepresented in those industries in particular. We want a new sector that looks like America. And so the plan would allow us to start to pay back the moral debt that we owe to environmental justice communities. So if you care about equity and you care about a future that offers prosperity to all, then hopefully you can support this American Jobs Plan.
Well said. So we got several questions from business leaders about economic competitiveness. And I have to tell you, I cannot get your story about the mayor in China and solar out of my head. That's very powerful. So as we look at China and solar, countries including Denmark and wind, how do we jumpstart American competitiveness?
I mean, so it is a great question. We should all be obsessed about this. I'm completely obsessed by it. The fact is, we should not be satisfied with buying solar panels from China or wind turbines from Europe as we're adding more and more renewable capacity to our grid. We can make this stuff right here. I mean, I don't know about you, but I have full faith in the American worker to be able to build them better than anyone else. We just need the opportunity and the partnership with the federal government to help bring down those initial capital investment costs. And that's why we need to make investments in our own competitiveness. These other countries are so happy that we are sitting by the side of the road. So our capacity for research and development and manufacturing and deployment, we need to invest in us. And that's what this AJP, American Jobs Plan, would do. If we want to compete in this $23 trillion global energy market, we got to start making it happen here. And that means the full supply chain, soup to nuts. How crazy is it, for example, that we want to electrify the country with electric vehicles and the batteries to those vehicles? Great. But we don't build the cells for those batteries. Other than the Tesla Gigafactory in Nevada, we have not historically been doing any of that, nor have we been getting the critical minerals here, which we have, that allow us to build a battery for an electric vehicle. You need anode, cathode, separator material, electrolyte. We should be building the whole supply chain here, soup to nuts, and we can do it if we just have a strategy that includes public-private partnerships to make it competitive and to allow us to support our own workers. So honestly, there's no other country on earth that will be able to match our effort if we do this. So this is why it's so critical for us to stand up for our own supply chains, our own businesses, our own workers here in this country. We haven't done it as a nation for decades and decades. So let's do this. Ah!
Love the passion. And if there was one lesson of 2020 that we can take away, it's the more things you can build in America and that supply chain, oh, the stronger we'll be. And the opportunity. So exciting. Let's stay with public-private partnerships and how we can work together with the business sector. So I'm going to combine two questions, one from Sinclair Cooper, who's the Executive Vice President of Hunt Companies in New Jersey, and one from Sean Neary, EVP of Edelman in Washington, D.C. They want to know, how can the private sector play a key role in this transition to clean energy, and what are the opportunities to partner with DOE?
Oh, great. Thank you. So obviously, the private sector is just a critical partner in climate action, starting from the most basic level. We're not going to create government companies to do all of this work. Obviously, we're going to hire private contractors and companies to be able to build and install and deploy all of this. So when we passed the American Jobs Plan, states and localities are going to access the funds that will enable them to get us to work right away as well. So Mayor, I mean, I know that you will be excited to know that, you know, we want to be able to use all of our public footprint, our purchasing power, to be able to buy US made products to put onto our federal buildings to reduce our own footprints of greenhouse gas emissions. We're going to leverage, I think it's more than $500 billion a year in purchasing power for clean energy tech manufacturing. We're going to electrify the federal fleet like the Postal Service. We're going to purchase 24/7 clean power for these federal buildings, all from the private sector. We're going to use our resources to spur deployment through tax credits and grants and loans that go to private developers and companies and organizations to get the job done. And it, you know, I would say this to anybody watching, if you have a project in mind to add renewable energy or transmission capacity to the grid, especially if it'll provide access to clean energy or even jobs for communities in needs, we want to hear from you. And there will be a lot more opportunity for all of this when we pass the American Jobs Plan. And the biggest role that the private sector can play right now when it comes to the clean energy transition is to let the public know where you stand on that American Jobs Plan. I know I sound like poor Johnny One Note or Jenny One Note, but I really, it's just so important that members of Congress hear that it would be really important for this country to see this investment and for the business community and for individuals. One way you might be able to help right now is by sharing your stories about how clean energy has helped your companies, if it's led to an increase in efficiency, for example, across your operations, if it's lowered your costs, if it's allowed you to hire more people. Those are the kind of stories I think that people need to hear. It's got to be concrete for people. So hopefully we can all partner and you can help us paint a picture of what the clean energy future would bring.
It really is exciting to be here at this moment and the potential of the transformation of our country for the better. I am now going to turn to Jim Doyle for our final question.
Thank you very much, Secretary Granholm, and thank you very much, Mayor Gallego. Mayor, do you have any advice for business leaders on what you think they should be doing?
If you are as excited as I am, I think it's important to share what is the potential. If you belong to any associations, whether it's the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce or an association of in the electric vehicle industry, please share with them what Secretary Granholm has been telling us today. I feel like I follow the American Jobs Plan pretty closely, but I have come away with several new ideas about how Phoenix might be involved in some of our local companies. And I hope you have as well. I actually feel like I have quite a to-do list of things to get going on. But I would encourage you to write into your industry publication, to share on social media what you are doing. And if you're interested in partnering with your local elected officials, Business Forward can help connect you, or we are happy in the Phoenix Mayor's office to write op-eds, share media ideas, just to share the excitement we feel today about what is possible and the great potential in our country. The momentum is already feeling strong, but this could really take us to the next level in leading in so many different categories. And I think we'll all be proud to have helped move the American Jobs Plan forward, to be part of the team that helped transform our country at this very exciting moment. So just think to yourself before you leave today, what is my takeaway? Is there something I can share, something I can start working on? It's important to share that with your members of Congress, but also I think it's worth speaking publicly about the potential here and really helping pass this bill.
Well, thank you very much, Mayor. We really appreciate it. You're absolutely right. So if you're interested in getting involved and you'd like to help write an op-ed or talking to a reporter, if you feel like you need some media training or just want to know how to make the case most effectively, please reach out to us at Business Forward. That's info@businessfwd.org, and we're more than happy to help. We also get a lot of calls from reporters who are looking to talk to small businesses about the infrastructure plan and what it means for them. So you might get an email from us saying that if you happen to live in Ohio, a reporter just called, and we encourage you to respond, and we'd love to help you out with that. Just on effective advocacy, one of the things that we've seen work well for business leaders is to make the argument that the different elements of the American Jobs Plan don't just fit together and complement one another. In many ways, they depend on one another. And if we're going to have a transition, for example, to electric vehicles, well, then we're going to need to build infrastructure to charge them. We're going to need to have a robust incentives to cause people to feel comfortable buying them. And we need to do both those things at the same time if we want to create all those great auto jobs here in the United States making those vehicles. So it's really important when you're talking to your colleagues, your employees, your neighbors, and your elected officials that you make the point about how the AJP pieces depend on one another and why we do have to go big. Thank you, Secretary Granholm. Thank you, Mayor Gallego, and everyone who joined today's briefing. We look forward to working with you again soon.
Thank you, everyone, for joining us. For more information on Business Forward programming, visit businessfwd.org. The Business Forward podcast is a production of Business Forward, hosted by me, Jim Doyle, produced and engineered by Alexi Lippman and Alex Pastanen. Thanks for listening. See you next time.